episode of Beyond the Barn, Exploring Animal Science, a podcast that focuses on life within the Department of Animal Science at Auburn, our programs, events, and activities, students, faculty, and staff. Hi, I'm Emma Turberville, and today we have a special treat for our listeners. Me and Abby are both students in Animal Science 4800 Issues in Animal Agriculture. This course is at the forefront of fostering knowledge, skills, and experiences in students regarding the critical topics facing animal agriculture. This class has been holding an environment for innovative, creative learning activities, from issue topic research to engaging in media and advocacy training. This semester, we've embarked on an exciting assignment that takes us beyond the textbooks and into the heart of the field. Here's the exciting part. We're reaching out to our very own departmental faculty to capture the rich stories that make our department exceptional. Today we're diving into the world of what it's like to be a faculty member at Auburn. The goal is to offer a platform where faculty members can share their professional journey, the significance of their research, and their points of pride. These episodes will not only be featured on our departmental website and social media, but will also be part of a broader podcast platform. Today we are joined by Ms. Sarah Jane French. Welcome.
Hi. Hello.
Okay, so to start off, tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you went to college, what major you started in, and how you decided on that.
Absolutely. So originally, I'm kind of from all over the place, but I will start out from where I kind of grew up, which was in Virginia. So I'm a Virginia native, and I grew up through agriculture my entire life. And so with that, it kind of led me on a career path per se. You know, they say everything happens for a reason. I ended up in El Dorado, Kansas for 2 years, going to a community college out there called Butler Community College. And I ended up there because I was very passionate about livestock judging and livestock evaluation, and saw an opportunity where I got a full ride actually to go out there and livestock judge for 2 years. And so started out in the Midwest and then transferred to Texas Tech, where I majored in animal science and more specifically had a concentration in business. And that's where I kind of finished up my bachelor's degree, decided that I liked Texas so much, and didn't really know where I wanted to go, whether I wanted to get a job in industry, and it was just kind of feeling like, what do I do? And so I ultimately landed on grad school, and finished up there in 2023 at Tarleton State. So it was almost a year ago, is where I finished up my master's in reproductive physiology. And so kind of a little all over the place, but my common theme was animal science throughout all of that. Just kind of delved into some different sectors, sometimes a little more business-based, sometimes a little more science-based. So I kind of got best of both worlds, if you will. So that's my career path in terms of education, and that's kind of how I ended up here today at Auburn, was through connections that I had made previously. So
you said that you grew up doing agriculture, I guess, even before you went to school. I'm just kind of curious, like, what were you involved with?
Right. So my family, I'm part of a century farm, and so through that, there's always been something agriculturally going on. It used to be a hog business, and then right before I was born, they sold out of the hogs and switched to a 180-acre vegetable farm. And so with that, I kind of grew up on the produce and the raising fruits and vegetables for various marketplaces around our community, as well as back in the day, we used to have some contracts with local military bases that we would provide for. Now we've kind of catered to Walmart, which is really, really cool. And then on another note of that, my father and I decided that we wanted to get into the goat business. And so in 2010, I took out a juvenile loan with Farm Credit and got $5,000, and my dad and I headed to Texas, where we purchased 17 does and a buck and started our goat business. So two different kind of sides of the agricultural industry, but yeah.
Yeah, I know you're the professor of practice for the youth livestock program. Mm-hmm. What exactly does that mean, I guess? What is your roles here at the university?
Right, because probably my position looks a lot different than what your normal faculty would here on staff. Most faculty are you know, deep into research. They're figuring out the next new things and being at the forefront of critical moments in animal science in terms of what's going on research-wise and teaching-wise. They have more of a role in that. My job is a little more outreach. And so although I am housed within the animal science building, my job covers the full scope of Alabama and youth involved in various livestock projects, whether that's, you know, showing sheep, goats, cattle, hogs, you know, livestock shows, or even as far as educational contests. So quiz bowls, skillathons, which skillathons are basically a whole knowledge contest across livestock species or livestock judging. And so my goal here at the university is to create a positive impact for those youth that are growing up in those kind of specific programs, and hopefully kind of also get them exposed to Auburn at the same time to keep them coming to this university, to this agricultural-based side of the university as well. And so kind of a little different, but ultimately my goal is to reach as many kids as possible and make them have a great experience, but also kind of work at Auburn and create an experience for them to want to come here. Alongside of that, I do have a minimal teaching responsibility. Have you heard of BFU? Any of you two?
Yes. I've done horseU.
Okay.
I have not done BFU.
Awesome. Well, maybe you want to join BFU because I also get to do, that's my little teaching plug. And so I really do like being in the classroom and getting to interact with students here at Auburn. And so that's my one way is through BFU. And so I had the pleasure of teaching that this past semester, this fall semester. And so kind of a little all over the place, but my main goal is just to continue reaching out and impacting students' lives in the world of agriculture.
Yeah, with that youth outreach, what has been like some of your favorite successes or achievements that you've seen in that kind of segment?
Honestly, my favorite thing that I've seen, because I started here last June, and so I've really gotten to interact with a lot of these youth because most of the kids that are in livestock showing are also involved in the educational aspect. And so the best thing I've been able to see is some of these students and some of these youth members just grow as a person. That's probably been my favorite thing, is just getting to know them and seeing them succeed. I for instance, there was this youth member who was his first time showing, and that was in July, and I saw him again this past weekend, and he's just blossomed into this awesome human being that's just so positive and has grown into an awesome livestock youth member. And so just that in itself has been rewarding in this job.
I know you explained that. I mean, you kind of have a bunch of different responsibilities, so like last semester might look different than this semester, but I guess what would you say like an average typical day is for you when you come into the office?
If I'm in the office, that means that I am working on either preparing for an educational contest, so making sure that I have all my ducks in a row, whether that's creating exams for them to take or exercises, or if it's a livestock judging contest, making sure that I have our livestock that are going to be there picked out for these classes. So if I'm in the office, that's kind of what I'm doing. Right now, for instance, I can't see it on my computer screen, but I'm working on resource materials for these contests so that students can have a outlook or an avenue to study. And so they're not searching all over the internet. They can go to one place. And so that's kind of what I'm working on now. And like you said, that's a perfect description, is that my semesters don't look the same. And my days definitely don't look the same either. It just really kind of depends what's going on. But yeah, that's kind of what I do in the office, is mainly just preparing or creating resources for these contests and other nature livestock things.
I'm assuming you don't conduct a research program, correct? Yeah, okay, I didn't think so. So we'll just keep going.
I was gonna say, you might want to edit that one out.
Yes. Yeah, we will. So I guess, I know you've only been in this role for a short period of time, but do you have students that you advise? For, like, I guess academic purposes?
Not academic purposes. I am the advisor for the Black and Bridal Club, though.
Like that, okay.
And so I would say that is a little, a portion of advising, not, you know, which classes you need to take and things like that. But I do, I am, they call me the permanent advisor. So I guess I'm stuck with them, but I do like my Black and Bridal kiddos. And so I advise them, which has been a kind of a neat experience in itself this year. But advising them more so on maybe leadership and guidance on that front has been really rewarding and fun.
Yeah, and since you mentioned that you just finished grad school, so you're still kind of, you know, what it's like to be graduating and getting into the workforce. Do you have, like, any advice for students that are kind of taking that next step and joining adult life?
It's scary, and to be completely honest, I don't think I was, you know, I was as ready as I'll ever be in terms of going into the workforce. And after I was done with grad school, I was like, yes, get me out of here. I'm ready. The biggest thing I could say is just don't be afraid and take those chances. Interact with people. That's the biggest thing nowadays, because my networking is 100% the reason why I'm here in Alabama. Yes, my education and schooling was very, very important and pivotal in getting me here. It was actually a connection that I had met way down the road during my academic career that led me to this position. And so just talking to people, interacting, and just don't be afraid of that.
Where did you, I guess, what were you doing to meet these types of connections? I guess for students that want to, that don't know how to network or don't know what to do, like, how did you make these connections?
Getting involved in the university, and so luckily at Texas Tech, I was involved in both Black and Bridal as well as livestock judging, and so there I was able to meet a lot of industry leaders, and through livestock judging was able to meet a lot of different connections across the entire country. But, you know, obviously not every university or program is going to have those specific sort of kind of clubs. For instance, like the livestock judging just got started back over here and they're doing incredible things. But just getting involved with the club that you like. For instance, here at Black and Bridal, we bring in a ton of industry speakers. We've had someone from Butterball. We've had people from the College of Veterinary Medicine and other kind of programs. And so going up and just having a conversation with them. Internships are a really good way to network. I think a girl that just defended here today did an internship with Golden State Foods, and now she's got an industry job with them. And so I think those are kind of the best ways to really get involved is just through local clubs or even organizations such as Cattlemen's, if you're more into the agriculture side of things.
Did you see yourself having this type of position when you were either in undergrad or even in grad school? Did you, like, yeah, this is the type of job that I'm going to have, that I want to have, or are you happy with your decisions? Maybe you wish you had taken another route?
I am absolutely happy with my decision. Did I see myself in this position year ago? Yes, I did see myself because I had already interviewed for the job. But if we back it up even further into my undergrad and graduate, first year and a half of my graduate career, no. I thought I was going to be a hardcore scientist. I thought I was going to be behind a microscope looking at embryos all day long, and that was going to be my job. And something just told me, hey, you don't want to be stuck behind a microscope 24/7. And that's when I was just kind of like in a weird spot in grad school. I had finished up my research. I was working on my literature review, and I got a text message from my old assistant coach at Texas Tech saying, hey, Auburn has this job position open. I think you'd be really good at it. And I was just kind of like, I took a peek at it and I was like, don't know if, you know, where my life's going to take me. So what does it hurt to apply? And so I applied, and kind of not really knowing what to expect when I interviewed. I'm very fortunate I got an interview, and now I'm in this position, and it's definitely something that I am very passionate about. And so just never really thought I would see an opportunity like that open up. And so that's kind of why maybe I just didn't think of it when I was going through my entire graduate school and undergrad. I really thought I was going to go to vet school at one point. That changed once I got out of Kansas. And so my priorities shifted even more to maybe, you know, going into specifically embryology, and then that even got shifted throughout graduate school. And so kind of another plug of advice is to just don't, things happen, be adaptable, and because sometimes it could turn out better than what you expected. And so just stay adaptable, and if things don't go your way, that's okay. Just kind of navigate from there, and it'll settle itself out.
Yes, I'm a very firm believer in everything happens for a reason.
Exactly. So, and I am too.
Through undergrad and grad school, you said that you were focused like pretty heavily like on research, like that's what you were gonna do,
right?
With you being like not totally left field, but like now you're in youth outreach and you're kind of teaching like younger students, is it just college age, or do you do like local?
Yeah, it's basically from K through college. Mm-hmm. is kind of the population that I reach within
okay.
the state.
Have any of those types of like science classes or any of that research kind of translated into the youth? Like, are you able to teach about that?
I would say maybe not my research specifically, just because it was so focused on a small ruminant
right.
problem, or maybe not problem, but we wanted an answer. I would say though that everything that I learned throughout my research, throughout my schooling, has prepared me for what I'm doing, mainly because a lot of the stuff that I get to teach the youth is stuff that you would probably, or you do learn in like your intro to animal science and your repro physiology and your beef production and your sheep production and those sort of classes. And so those courses were absolutely critical because I do teach on those aspects. And so I would say yes, in a way, maybe not so like research focused, mm-hmm. but mainly just like production based focused is more so kind of what I teach these youth members. So
let's see, I guess moving on to another topic that's related to animal sciences, since you've had so many different experiences, like how would you say that I guess since you were a kid until now, like how like the animal science, like just not even like this department, but like this, the industry or like the agriculture industry has changed. Could you recognize any ways that?
Oh, for sure. I would say, you know, growing up, I was heavily involved in livestock shows and things like that. And so I would say in that term of the industry has changed immensely in the fact that we have a lot more people involved in it. But just as a wider scope in terms of the agricultural industry as a whole, aside from livestock showing, just looking at straight up face value of it, I really think we're in a very critical time point right here and now, because we have been tasked over the past 12 years or so, I guess that's how long I've been out of it, not out of it, but that's how long I've kind of been even involved in it, is that we're getting land and less land and less land and less land. And so cattle numbers are at an all-time low. This year we've actually produced the lowest amount of cattle, I think I saw somewhere the other day, maybe since like the 1950s. And so I think our farmers and ranchers have had to make a really big shift to cater to not only what's, you know, what they grew up as a lifestyle and what they love and have a passion for, but also dealing with things of, hey, we're losing land, we're losing resources, we're getting fought on every aspect that we do. And so I think that's really how our agricultural industry has changed, is that we've had to kind of shift and navigate our way through the water on in terms of kind of making both worlds happy in a sense, as you know, in terms of producers versus consumers. And so really learning how to more so communicate with our consumers, like, hey, we're doing this for the good, we're not bad people. And so I would say more so than ever, our farmers have had to maybe come more so out of their comfort zone and go and interact with more consumers on a daily basis, just to make sure that their business kind of keeps up and running. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's been the major shift.
Yeah, Yeah, with that shift, what, off the top of your head, have you noticed some, like, like ways that Auburn University specifically has tried to kind of offset that negative shift?
Right. I think Auburn, it's something very unique about the Department of Animal Sciences here at Auburn is that they have a bee forage extension team. And so that works, some of the work that they put out is absolutely incredible. And they're the ones that interact with the producers. And so they're the ones that they're doing this, you know, forefront research in terms of grazing management, in terms of grasses, in terms of, grazing beef specifically. And so they're able to take their research and output it to these producers. And I think they're arguably one of the best in the nation at outreaching those producers and getting things out, information out to those guys and gals and cattle women and men in the state. And so, they're doing about everything they can in terms of just making sure that our people within the state are, you know, knowledgeable, have the knowledge to kind of proceed with things shifting, I guess is the best way to put it. And so that's something very unique to Auburn and the Department of Animal Sciences, and even more so other kind of sectors of our animal science. I mean, everything that they're researching is for the greater good, whether, you know, it's our meats department and they're looking at quality, ensuring consumer safety and making sure that they're producing the highest quality amount of product, or we have our nutrition people that are looking at, you know, how can we feed these cattle on less land and less resources and still get the same amount of gain. And so I would say that they're on it in terms of where we're at in the industry and trying to help navigate our consumers and our producers through this shift.
If you had the ability, I guess it's just like a fun question, if you had the ability to change anything in the animal ag, like with you just snap your fingers like you're a magician and you change it, what issue would you choose to solve?
Oh man.
Like, there's so many of them.
If I could just snap my fingers and issue would be solved.
Yes.
I guess the biggest one that I would say would be to solve. Wow, okay, there's a lot of them. The biggest one I would say is that cattle are the causers of climate change.
Yes.
And climate increase, because they are actually the world's like best upcyclers. Like,
yeah.
They literally take a thing that us humans cannot eat and they thrive off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually help our world by they really help when we manage and graze them correctly. Man, they can do a lot of incredible things in terms of the grasslands. Everyone thinks, you know, that they're in charge of destroying them. Well, not if you manage it properly and not if you take care of both the cattle and the grass. And so if that would be the one thing I could change, because that's something that I don't know if that's the narrative, that's just we can't get it across to everybody, or if someone's just pushing the wrong narrative so hard that they really believe that they're making their, you know, temperatures rise because of methane production.
Yeah. I believe, yeah, that's a huge misconception. I actually
right.
took a climate change class last semester with COSAM, and that agriculture, or just like cows, are not the leading cause of climate change. I mean, and if sure, they may take land that could have trees in it, but if that land didn't belong to cows, they would probably put a factory on it or buildings, which cause even more damage and even more environmental problems. I think cows belching methane is not the sole contributing factor to climate change, and that is a huge misconception.
Right.
It's like all humans, and like, I mean, New York City, all the buildings and that produce so much pollution in the air, like, that's a huge contributor, not,
right.
like, 20 cows on a piece of property, or, like, 300 cows on a piece of property.
They're probably helping the environment more than anything else.
And
not probably, they are, because they are actually, A, fertilizing the ground. They are helping sustain that grass and its root system by grazing it properly. And so my favorite thing was after the Super Bowl, and you saw, like, I don't know if y'all are on Instagram or Facebook, and they were like, it was like maybe a caption that was like, yeah, cattle are the reason why our climate's changing. And then you just see this map of all these jets from who knows where just leaving Las Vegas this year. And it was just absolutely crazy. And so that's what I would want to, at least, or maybe not that specifically, or maybe specifically that, just kind of maybe changing consumers, or, you know, the general public's overview of the livestock industry. Don't get me wrong, there are some producers that don't do animals justice, and I mean, there's one bag at an egg in every 10, and so I think that's across the board in almost every industry, whether we want to believe it or not. And so I just hope that maybe one day that one bag, bad egg, doesn't kind of hurt the rest of the 9 good eggs, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to see producers that care about their animals, that want their, I mean, they live a great life for those 9 good producers. I promise you that. And they care about them more than they care about themselves.
Yeah.
So that's what I would want to change. It's just general public outlook and how they view the agricultural industry, which I know that doesn't start with just them. It's a two-part way. And so that's where our communication's got to be beefed up in a way.
That's a good
pun intended.
That's a good pun.
Yeah, our class that we're doing this podcast through is Issues in Animal Agriculture. And our like mission statement that we've kind of made and adopted has just been like, basically bridging the gap between like people that grew up in agriculture and like the majority of the consumers.
Absolutely.
So the carbon or the methane is something that we have talked about in class.
Say it's probably been at least a hot topic, because most people have probably heard of someone saying something bad about it. I saw a really good TED Talk the other day, and it was from a member of the National Junior Angus Board. And she talked about the importance of cattle and how they're not, you know, the leading contributors to climate change. And so I highly recommended it. I need to find it and send it out, because it was so, so good in terms of just giving a really good broad overview of kind of how cattle can impact the ecosystem in a positive light. And so just getting more of the positive lights out and trying to maybe cancel some of those negatives is where our industry kind of is sitting at right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really hard to find, I guess, good, reliable sources, because, I mean, there are people in the agriculture industry that may bend some information. There's people that aren't in the agriculture industry community that are going to bend information. And so it's like, who do you trust? But I think with the whole climate change, I think people who don't believe in animal agriculture are maybe just like looking for a reason to make those who don't know any better, like, oh, cows are bad, and especially if they already don't agree with like animal slaughter and all that, which is fine, because if someone doesn't agree with that, like, that's totally their opinion, they could think that.
Absolutely.
It's all the misconceptions and information that people just make up, like, I'm doing a presentation for this class on like cell cultured meat versus like naturally farmed grown meat, and like I read this news article from Berkeley that stated that this was I guess cellular agriculture was better because it's more economically friendly. We're running out of meat, we're running out of meat because we don't have the resources. They don't want to give us the resources to grow the meat. And then it's also more humane. So, like, I can understand, like, the more humane part. People don't believe that, but, like, all of the other things. I mean, this is coming from Berkeley.
Right.
And it's just scientists and those who don't, like, cellular agriculture. Like, I just...
Lab-grown meat stresses me out. Just because it's very intriguing how that works. And I think, you know, it's a touchy subject.
Yeah.
And I think it's very new technology, which I think it's a cool technology that they're able to grow muscle. I'm going to say muscle because that's what they're using. They're using muscle cells in order to proliferate. And so, it's very interesting.
Yes. Do we need to do it? No, I think it's something, for me personally, I think it's something that like, we can grow stem cells into different body parts. Like, let's see if we can do it with like meat for the scientists who don't believe in agriculture, but, like, I don't even know, like, most scientists, like, use animals appropriately and following protocol for their research. Like, I feel like they wouldn't care if it was more or less humane. Like, I really just think they just want to see if they can do it, but that's just my own thought speculating. There's no facts to back that up.
There is a system in place for research where you have to, if you want to do research, you have on animals specifically. Each institution has an animal care and use committee, and so you have to fill out a very detailed protocol of everything that you want to do. And so I think that's a really good factor, a really good implementation into research to kind of have like a checks and balances sort of system. But yeah, I agree on what you said.
It's all very, very interesting to...
It's a lot of new technologies, and I think, you know, everyone's just looking for a way to make the world a better place, and so sometimes we get lost in the weeds and want to get negative on a lot of different aspects, but at the end of the day, it's all about the industry that you want to be a part of, and so I like to say you don't have to necessarily... understand it, but maybe respect it.
Yeah.
And so, or respect their opinions and just kind of keep shedding the light of the positivity of the animal industry and the agricultural industry. And
yeah, I think that's an issue when, I guess, when debating like agriculture versus non-agricultural people, that both sides sometimes just don't want to hear the other person's opinion.
Exactly.
So they're not open. Like, they don't have to change their mind, but you can respect what they think and, like, hear what they say just so that you can understand how they think and they can understand how you
absolutely
think. Yeah,
absolutely.
Even if you don't change your mind, it's still good. Yeah, always respect other people's decisions and what they want to do, because at the end of the day, it's what they want to do and it's their opinion, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I have a friend that's hardcore vegetarian and complete opposite of her, and that's completely fine. But we both respect each other's opinion at the end of the day. And so I think that's what this world needs a little bit more of, is just a little more love and respect on both sides instead of just tearing down each other and presenting the truth. That's my goal here. And so, is just presenting the truth, whether it's through youth livestock programs or speaking to a bunch of older guys and gals. I think that's the best way to proceed with anything in life. So,
Well, thank you again, Ms. French, for joining us today. We can't wait to hear more about your exciting work and effort to serve students and stakeholders in animal agriculture. Listeners, please stay tuned to future episodes of Beyond the Barn, Exploring Animal Sciences, hosted by students as we plan to delve into other areas of the department and explore the diverse facets of animal science through the eyes of our talented students. I'm Emma Turberville and Abby Searles, and we hope to see you at Auburn real soon.